Welcome, everybody, to the Stoned On Sports Podcast. My name is Matt. Really happy to be here with you on this chilly Tuesday evening. It is time for Prospect Week. That's right. We're going to be taking a look at some of the MLB.com's top 25 prospects. We're going to focus on dudes who you could expect to see this season. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Super Wild Card weekend that just passed. It was pretty enjoyable for the two of us here. And lastly, that's right, we got class again today, folks. Fantasy Baseball 101. We are going to be talking about some of the common and not so common statistics you're going to hear, but all of them are going to be relevant to helping you build that championship fantasy baseball team. As always, we got Kyle here. What's going on, buddy? I see you rocking that Seinfeld shirt. You must be feeling pretty good today.
Oh, yeah. Feeling good. Feeling good. Other than I just hate some people. God, people really rub me the wrong way. People really ruin people for me. But I'm doing all right. You doing good?
Yeah, hanging in there, man. Hanging in there.
I see Dubo's in the chat. What's up, fellas? How puckered were you guys in the second half of that Lions game? Good win for sure. Now the pressure is off. Go win it. Absolutely. It was very, I was full of anxiety. I had sweaty palms. It was bad. Sitting on the edge of my seat, you know, it was rough, but we pulled it off. And as soon as, you know, Amon-Ra got that reception for the first down, I looked at the time and I'm like, it's over.
So, yes, we got the dub. That's what matters.
Yep. And Blue Yay's here too. Hey boys, see you in the Super Bowl. God, I hope so. God, I hope so. Bills Lions Super Bowl. Wouldn't that be cool? We would definitely be wagering. Blue Yay's definitely be wagering. Glad you guys could join us tonight. So yeah, prospects.
Yes,
I believe we'll get started. Matt, I believe you are first.
I am. And before we jump into talking about pretty much everybody's number one overall prospect, it's important we define what a prospect is. That is a hitter who has had 130 at-bats or fewer, a pitcher who has pitched less than 50 innings, or somebody who has spent less than 45 days on an active roster. I know that the clarifications, they get kind of weird in football or basketball. Just a rookie is a rookie is a rookie. Yep. So,
service time.
This is something I can speak to, Blue, and let me tell you something. Kyle was talking about having a chapped ass earlier. Alek Manoah is a dude who chapped the shit out of me last year. I don't know what the hell went wrong with him. I want to say it was a lack of conditioning along with the new pitch clock and everything that he just did not jive with. I had him on a team and I was so looking forward to having him and, you know, he was really at the core of where I was building my pitching staff. And then he just went all Fat Albert and completely shit the bed. I didn't drop him, but I'm not going to keep him at the salary that I've got him at. He's not worth $16, but I do think there's some buy low opportunity there. You know, he has a talent, you know, he has the stuff. It's just a matter of, can he get his mind right and return to the form that he showed us a couple of years ago? There's an old adage in baseball, and I think it was Bill James who said this, and it's, once a player demonstrates a skill, he owns it. And what that means is, all right, if a player has shown you he can hit 30 home runs, he can pitch 220 innings and have a good ERA and strike some folks out, you know the talent is there. You know he has the physical ability to do it. And I think that's going to ring true with Manoah. Now, is he somebody I'm going to be drafting high? Absolutely not. But in the last couple of rounds of your draft, or if you're getting to the end of your auction and you've got a buck or two left over, might be a damn good buy low candidate.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he looks like this spring if he's slimmed down a little bit or anything. I remember you were excited to get him a couple seasons ago. I think maybe you got him through a trade, if I recall.
No, I drafted him and then slapped a contract on him.
But yeah, you talked a lot of Alek Manoah love, and last season it did not go well at all. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he discovered poutine or something for the first time, and it was just over from there.
I don't know. But they did send him down for, it wasn't as long as I think we both thought it was going to be for, and he did come back up, right?
Yeah, they sent him way down. They sent him down to Destin, down to the complex.
Yep.
And initially people were freaking out about that. It's like, oh my God, they demoted him to A ball. No, it's a matter of the facilities and staff that they had available there at the complex that they don't have at their AAA affiliate there, I think in Buffalo or something like that.
Cool. All right. Let's do what we came to do.
Yes. So pretty much everyone's number one overall prospect, second baseman, shortstop, Jackson Holliday from the Baltimore Orioles. He's actually going to be the first of a few Jacksons that we talk about today.
Yeah.
He's somebody who has been hot shotting through the minors. He's never posted an on-base percentage lower than 396 at every level. He has a 70 grade hit tool. And when it comes to prospects, you're going to hear 70 grade, 50 grade, 55. We're going to put that into context too. Baseball players and specifically prospects are graded on a scale from 20 to 80. Think of 50 as average, 60 is above average, 40 is below average. Once you get to 70, 75, 80, you're talking about very, very elite talent. And that's what Jackson Holliday is. He has a 70 grade hit tool. His bat is going to play immediately in the majors, as well as his speed. He's not going to hit for a whole lot of pop to start off with, but he will get on base for you. And he's a pretty smart base runner as well. If you can snag him, we don't know exactly when he's going to be up. There's a pretty good chance that maybe he breaks camp with the big club and they plug him right in. We can look to see how the team handled Gunnar Henderson and that dickhead behind the plate, whose name escapes me at the moment. Adley Rutschman, to kind of give us a clue of how this current Orioles regime is going to handle prospects. But I think Jackson Holliday, if you can get him and plug him into a middle infield spot and kind of let him figure things out for the first few weeks that he's up, I think you're going to be handsomely rewarded.
Yeah, he's a great player. I think he's a mature hitter already. He had 101 walks against 118 strikeouts last year. That there's several major leaguers who couldn't hit 101 walks in two or three seasons even. So I like that for him. I think he should be the opening day. I know they got Jorge Mateo there. He's not much else other than speed guy. That's probably his only great tool. I think he had 30 steals last season. So I expect him to be the opening day starting shortstop here going forward.
Yeah, if it's not opening day, it could be a scenario similar to what we saw with Chris Bryant, where they kept him down in the minors for a few weeks just to get that extra year of service time.
Could be. All right. Jackson number two. Here we go. Jackson Churio, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's in that system. Guys from Venezuela. He was originally signed as a shortstop. But his 70 grade speed, like Matt just mentioned, is perhaps the loudest tool in his bag. So they moved him to center field, which is probably a good move. He signed a big 8-year deal, $82 million. He's going to be the opening day center fielder there, I imagine. He's got a really quick bat, some superstar potential, I think, too. He's trending towards being a 2025 guy as a 20-year-old rookie, and that says a lot. My only problem with him is his plate skills are not so great. He's probably going to strike out a lot, like a Luis Robert or Adelis Garcia even. But I like him ahead of guys like Mountcastle, Darton Varsho, people like that. I think he's somebody mid-range 60th outfielder drafting this year.
Yeah, if I can get him as my, you know, fifth outfielder or maybe that first guy on the bench, I'm pretty happy. You were saying, you know, he's got the speed. There's 20-25 upside. He's got some pop in his bat, but really, you know, you're exactly right. What speaks the loudest? He has 60 stolen bases over the past couple seasons. He's got a 70 run tool. He's got a 60 grade power. So it's there. Given how young he is, it's going to take him a little bit of time to fill out and get into a real grown-ass man body. But once he does, you're going to have a nice piece there.
I agree.
So next on the list, our first pitcher, Paul Skeens. And look at that mustache.
Oh, yeah.
So he was a number one overall pick in 2023 out of LSU. In his last season there, he went 13-2 across 19 starts, had a sub-2 ERA, threw 122 innings. In those 122 innings, he had 209 strikeouts and only 20 walks. He was also the top two-way player in that draft class. He was the only player in college to have 10 or more home runs and 10 wins. So you know he can handle the stick. He did that in 2022. A lot of people are calling him the best pitching prospect in the past roughly 15 years, putting him on par with Steven Strasburg. Mm-hmm. I do have some concerns about the Pirates' ability to develop a pitcher like this. They've done an okay job more recently with Mitch Keller, but in the past, you look at Garrett Cole or Tyler Glass now, a couple dudes who didn't really flourish until they left the Pirates.
Yeah. For sure. He came up last year and threw a few starts. I can't remember, but, and then went back down, but definitely, like you said, prototypical power pitcher, huge guy, 6'6". He's got a four seam fastball that'll kind of remind you of, DeGrom's or even Aaron Nola's, with that flat angle. His really good pitch I like is his slider. It's upper 80s, incredible break on it, and he's got a lot of high whiff rates on it, north of 60%, which is outstanding. So I think he's a lock to join the rotation there for the Pirates, possibly as the opening day starter. But I think you're going to definitely have the expectation of limited innings this season, though.
Oh, for sure. And they'll, you know, he threw 122 last year. Maybe they let him go 130, 140 this season. Yeah. It's not like the Pirates are going to contend. And
right.
A pitcher of this caliber with this kind of prospect pedigree, you're going to want to make sure you take your time and ramp him up slowly, because you're thinking about the future with him, not necessarily this season.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Next, Dylan Cruz, outfielder for the Washington Nationals. Went to college at LSU, that huge team there. He's the reigning SEC player of the year, was the second overall selection from Washington for Washington in July. Started out in low A. His bat to ball skills are legit, and so is the power. I think he's a 20 plus homer bat all day, could come into more power, as he adds some more strength. He's a little slight, a little bit. He's 6'6", 205, but he runs well. Defensively, I think he's great. He's athletic enough, and I think he should be a solid center fielder for them in the long run. He's, you know, as all new, you know, rookies prospects go, he was hitting great in low A, and then, got a promotion to double A, and then just kind of and had a 27, almost 28% strikeout rate. So he's got some things to work on, but fine player. I think he's going to be great for the Nationals.
Sure. And it's important to remember the jump from single A to double A is massive.
Yeah.
Because you've got at double A, that's where you've got your real high pedigree prospects. Back in the day, players would progress through the minor leagues. They go to rookie ball and then, you know, low A, high A, double A, triple A, and then to the show. What you've seen now over the past, we'll call it decade, is you've got a lot of the real elite talent skipping triple A and going from double A right up to the majors. Dylan Cruz, look, he's another dude with a 70 hit grade. His bat is going to play. He's seeing a lot of real hard breaking stuff at double A for the first time. I think the power is going to come, and just looking at his last season in college, across 938 plate appearances, he had a 498 on base percentage.
That's excellent.
I mean, we're talking about a dude who literally got on base pretty much half the time.
Yeah. Yep. Can't go wrong with that. Yep. You can get on base. Excellent. All right. And the next Nationals outfielder.
Yes. Next up, we have James Wood. He come over from San Diego as part of the Juan Soto deal. He is a massive dude. He has light tower power. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just monster power in him. He's recently last season, he had 115 mile an hour exit velocity, which is just insane. Absolutely insane. He's got a bit of speed, so maybe you can get a 30-20 season out of him somewhere along the line. But being 6'7" also means he's got a really big strike zone, and he's going to have to learn how to control that. That's a similar issue to what Aaron Judge was dealing at.
Yep.
He's the son of a European professional basketball player. So you know there's a nice family athletic pedigree there as well. He does strike out a lot. And just talking about that plate discipline, that's something that, while it's not going to keep him from getting up to the majors, if he doesn't get it under control, he's not going to stick up there for long, but he's going to get plenty of runway to figure it out.
Yeah. He's got to figure out, like you said, ways to cover those holes in his huge swing. He does have enough speed probably to get double digit steals in his peak years when he's up here and going. I like him, but I know there's talk about, we talked about a lot of these guys are expected this year, but some parts of the net or some things about the Nationals are saying 2025. So we'll see if he does come up. That's my guess. I don't know. That's all I got.
That's good enough.
All right.
Move on to the next.
All right. Jackson, number three, Jackson Merrill. Shortstop for the Padres. Actually drafted him last year in a league and traded him away for some talent. But guy shows excellent bat-to-ball skills, solid approach, projectable power. He's got a pretty left-handed swing, too. I thought it was nice when I was watching some film on him, some clips. His deal is he's 6'3", he's plenty of power. But he is still pounding the ball into the ground instead of more, you know, trying to lift the ball, drive the ball, line drives, I should say. He may never steal 30 bases, not the fastest guy, unless he can add some muscle to his frame. He should get 10 or 15 a year, but I think he is extremely high floor, and there is more ceiling here than most people realize, myself included. I don't think we'll see him early. I think it'll be later. He hit 277 on base, was 326, and with 15 homers and 15 stolen bases. So some things to work on there.
He does. The thing I like about him the most is he does a great job of using the whole field. You would think with somebody with that size that they would tend to be a dead pole hitter looking for that power, but that's not really him. He strikes out a bit. Last year, he had 62 strikeouts and 35 walks, but a 2-to-1 ratio for a prospect like him, you're going to take it. That was across 114 games. He's going to have some pop. He's another one of those dudes that you're going to be looking for him to kind of fill out some more. And that's really the tough part, especially when you're trying to project not only power, but in-game power, is how seriously are these guys going to take their nutrition and their weight training and everything? Because that's going to make a huge difference.
It is.
So now we are headed out to New England. Marcelo Mayer, shortstop for the Red Sox. So he's a dude, he scuffled a little bit last year when he got to Double A, which is kind of to be expected, but he was striking out over 25% of the time. He should be able to hit for some power. He's likely going to be a 25 home run bat and carry a 260, 270 average. The Green Monster there in Boston is going to help. He's one of those players where he's more of a, we'll call it a complete hitter, as opposed to really being a standout at any one particular thing. He'll plug in there at shortstop and likely he's going to hit towards the bottom of the order to begin with as he kind of feels his way through. But I could see him in the future being maybe a number five or number six hitter.
Yeah. What I liked on him is his jump in exit velocity from the 22 season to the 23 season. He had 103 mile per hour Exit velocity, that was 90th percentile in 2002 in A-ball. Got promoted to double A-ball. He jumped it up to 105 miles an hour with a max of 112, so that's pretty good. I know he did have a shoulder injury he was dealing with early last year as well. Could be a good time to buy on him in a dynasty league. He's got some upside. I think it's going to be a big development year for him as well, just with that shoulder.
Agree wholeheartedly.
Fantastical. All right, next, going to the south side. Shortstop, Colson Montgomery with the White Sox, left-handed batter. Let's see, he was a 22nd pick in the 21st draft. He had a back strain injury that slowed his beginning of his development down as well. But he did return last year, reached base at a 4.56 clip. Also very good, plate discipline as well. His athleticism, I think, is going to carry him long there at shortstop. That's going to help. He's 6'3". And he's not a big pop guy. He's only hit 19 home runs in 186 career minor league games. The data looks solid. Did post a 78% contact rate as well last season. He was a decorated high school athlete in three seasons. But he's only been playing baseball full-time two-three seasons, so lots of development to go for him too. But he's still a mid-season hopeful.
Yeah, and he's drawing a lot of comparisons to Corey Seager. And a lot of it is just because of his size, and he's a lefty hitting shortstop. He does well controlling the zone given his age and relative inexperience, and you're going to see some power as he learns to elevate the ball. And typically you're going to find that is one of the last skills to come around unless you're somebody who just kind of does it naturally. There's a big difference in that being the natural swing path for you and for you having to adjust to be able to elevate and get some loft on the ball.
For sure.
So now
a couple more to go.
Yes. We've got Brooks Lee, shortstop for the Twinkies. He is a switch hitter, and he actually had more walks than strikeouts in college, which is, you know, pretty damn rare. Last season, he put up an 808 OPS across AA and AAA, 16 home runs, 2-1, you know, walks to strikeouts. He had fewer than one strikeout per game. If you can do that, I'm a happy camper. Only Jackson Holliday and Dylan Cruz have a better hit tool than he does. He comes in at a 65. He's not going to be taking shortstop away from Carlos Correa. He'll probably move to second or third base. I doubt he has the foot speed to be an effective second baseman, so he'll probably plug in at third. But his glove is really going to play there.
I agree. You mentioned he's a switch hitter. Guy kills it from the left side. Posted an 860 OPS as a lefty last season. Dropped down to 603 as a righty last season. He also struck out 14% from the left versus 24% from the right. You want this guy hitting from the left side for sure in Minnesota. All right. And we got one of our own homegrown, or not homegrown, but excuse me, Colt Keith from the Tigers. Guy's a pure hitter with plus power. Without having to sell out for it. Let's see. Hold on. You know, he was a pitcher.
I had no idea.
I know. So he was a talented two-way guy. They drafted him, the Tigers did, in the fifth round, and they immediately moved him off of the mound in shortstop, and which for all reports say he was comfortable with. So we'll look for him probably. I don't know. You think he'll play second? I think he'll play third.
I think he's going to end up at third as well.
Yeah.
Long term.
For sure.
I really like him. He's got above average contact skills, and he's a real line drive hitter. I do have a concern at Comerica kind of sapping some of his power potential because he's not the kind of power hitter that, you know, Spencer Torkelson is or somebody like that. But I could see him more as being a good doubles guy. I mean, he might end up with 20 home runs and 30 doubles or something like that, just given the ballpark.
Yeah. And if he does come up, I don't think there's a lot of risk for platoon, just like the last guy, he hits from the left as well. Mash left, or I didn't say hits, but hits left-handed pitching. It was 939 OPS against righties and a 909 versus lefties. Close, nice. Even. It's good. He's known as a hard worker. He's constantly looking to improve his game. I think we'll see him pretty early this year.
I think so too. We got Dubo. He's a Brooks Lee fan. I can dig it, brother. His new guy. You got some talent there in Minnesota, and I imagine Royce Lewis is going to get moved to the outfield there in an attempt to keep him healthy, because when he is healthy, oh my God, can that dude hit? Which will give Brooks Lee an opportunity to slide in.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. All right. So that is 10 prospects we did today. We're going to do another 10 on Thursday show. Again, kind of an expected time of arrival in the majors of some point this season. Some might fall for the cracks and not make it for, you know, reasons, but
it's an inexact science.
It certainly is. Okay, a little quick recap on the weekend. Hey, NFL, Lions, first playoff game win in 32 years. Feels amazing, brother. Feels amazing.
Oh, my God, does it. And just there was a little bit of poetic justice there, too. You had the, you know, the narrative around Goff and Stafford, and Reynolds spent some time with the Rams as well. So it was, you know, nice for him.
Brad Holmes was there.
Brad Holmes.
15, 20 years, I think, in the Rams organization. So, hell yeah, there was definitely a couple storylines there.
Yeah, there were. I mean, Stafford played a hell of a game, over 350 yards, couple touchdowns. Jared Goff did the same thing. Like, the big thing with him is you need a clean game out of him. He did fumble, but, you know, they didn't lose it. They maintained possession. He did exactly what the team needed him to do in order to win.
Yeah, it was great. Just, it's so great. I'm so ready for Sunday at 3 o'clock versus the Buccaneers. Detroit played them earlier in the season, so hoping we can win them again. We played them at Tampa Bay as well. This Tampa Bay team now is a little bit different than that team earlier. I expect it to be a tougher game, a little closer game. But I'm ready. Ford Field gets another home playoff game. It's amazing.
And another home win.
Yep. The Cowboys just imploded again. Playoff Dak, you know, reappeared again, no surprise to anyone. What the fuck is going on there? Mike McCarthy can win regular season games all day long and just can't win in the playoffs anymore.
No, he can't. And quite frankly, I'm very happy to see it. If you look at the box score, you're going to see that, you know, Dak threw for, you know, 400 yards or whatever it was. That shit was garbage time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like this game was, I don't want to say it was over at the half, but it was damn near over.
He threw 60 times. 60. That's got to be the highest this year in attempts. I don't think I've seen 60.
Yeah, it was way up there, and that's as good as he's played. That's not a viable path to victory for anyone.
Nope, it's not. Packers look like a good young team. Jordan Love playing some ball, multiple pass touchdowns again. He's been doing that all season. And you can definitely see what Aaron Jones brings to this team when he is fully healthy.
Absolutely.
He just wasn't most of the year, missed plenty of time. The last couple weeks of the season, he was looking better and just exploded again with three touchdowns on the ground. So good for Green Bay, but FTP all the same.
Agreed. And that was a game where I didn't really want either team to win.
Yeah.
But, you know, squirt gun to my head, I'm going to choose the Packers just because that means Detroit gets another home playoff game.
Yep. 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 What do we got here? Dubo. Oh, sorry. Well, I jumped ahead. Supersonic 60 times and made no money. Yeah, no, I didn't make any money this weekend. All the bets I did were not right. It was crazy. Does the Pack have a chance in San Fran? Dubo wants to know. We were just talking about this.
I think they do simply because of their young receivers, and Jordan Love is playing very, very well. The path to beating San Francisco and specifically their defense is through the air. And I think, you know, Jaden Reed, Romeo Dubs, Dontavian Wicks, we'll see what Christian Watson's going to bring to the table. Those are dudes who have shown even earlier in their career that they can get open. They can get some separation. I do have some concerns about Jordan Love and specifically his accuracy, but if he can play a clean game and get the ball to those receivers in space in a position where they can actually do something with it once they've got it, they got a hell of a shot.
He was pretty accurate this past weekend. He looked good. I'm shocked. I guess it'll come down to Green Bay's defense in that game, right? That's how I feel. I mean, can they stop the 49ers offense? CMC's going to play. I think he was back to practice today. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think, and this sounds, I guess, strange this year, but like if I'm playing San Francisco, I want to make Brock Purdy beat me. I'm not going to let CMC beat me. It just, you know, if you look at the games where he threw his interceptions, once he gets up around that 30 attempt mark is when the turnover tendencies start to come out.
Yeah.
If I can create a game script where he's having to throw 30, 35, 40 times, I think that's going to be their best chance of victory.
For sure. And another big team, the Eagles, I'm going to use the word again, implode from the last 2 months of the season. Just lost to Tampa Bay. The Tampa Bay was the better team last night. Baker Mayfield played good enough, had 337 yards and 3 touchdowns.
That's a little bit better than good enough.
It is. Eagles were definitely missing A.J. Brown, but they look lost. Jason Kelce announced he's going to retire for sure this time, it looks like. So end of a good career for him in the NFL. Fine center in this league. I imagine he'll go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And I know it's happened before, and this isn't some kind of unicorn experience, but it was kind of cool to see the tush push get stopped.
Yeah,
there on that 2-point conversion. Now, I understand may have grabbed dude's helmet and yanked on him to bring him backwards, but wasn't called.
Nope.
If it wasn't flagged, it's not a penalty.
The Steelers, you know, went to Buffalo in the frigid snowstorm. Well, it wasn't snow there anymore, but I think we all knew that they weren't going to win. I just can't see it. So they're going to go to – no, they're not going anywhere. The Chiefs are coming to their place next weekend.
Yeah,
Mahomes gets to travel for the first time in the playoffs. We'll see how that goes. Defense travels well, and that Kansas City defense is the reason they are where they are this season.
Yeah, and that team just kind of completely remade themselves on the fly from being a Mahomes-centric, high-volume passing attack. Now they're leaning more towards old-school football, more running the ball, more playing defense.
Pacheco had 24 carries. So yeah.
And it's really two teams who have kind of rediscovered the run game.
Okay.
Who
are you talking about?
The Bills and the Chiefs.
Oh, you're talking. Okay. I got you. All right. I understand.
You know, the thing we were talking about prior to.
Yeah. It's confused for a second, but
boy, the Browns really got their dicks knocked in the dirt.
Holy cow. CJ Stroud. Jesus. What a great player.
No
youngest
kidding.
QB to win a playoff game. Routed them.
The pick sixes help.
For sure. Yeah, they did. The Texans, you know, we did not expect them to be in this position. We didn't expect them to win the division. They're definitely outperforming with a rookie QB and a rookie head coach. Kudos to them, man. They had some talent there. Them and the Packers are fun young teams to watch on the rise. I don't think this year is going to be their year, but look out for them next year.
So if you had to choose the Packers or the Texans to go on the road and beat their respective one seed, who would you choose?
I choose the Texans just because I think that their defense is far superior to Green Bay's. I don't think either of them are going to win, but I would definitely go with the Texans. You know, they're going to sling it. CJ Stroud's not scared. He doesn't look like a rookie quarterback at all. And that defense is much improved from last season.
Hell yeah, it is. And Green Bay, you can tell they're a team on the rise. Mm-hmm. I just don't necessarily think this is their year. Now, would I love to see them go to San Francisco and win? Absolutely. Because that would mean a pretty good shot at Detroit hosting the NFC Championship game. Right. I know our buddy Brandon would be incredibly happy about that. He went to the game this past week. He'll be going next week, and I'm sure he wants to go to one more game this season.
I'm sure he does. I'd be a better shot to win the NFC and go to the Super Bowl. I can't believe we're talking about Lions possibly going to the Super Bowl. It's insane. It feels so weird.
It's a surreal feeling. It would be, you know, since I picked Cleveland to go to the Super Bowl and that, you know, age yeah. like milk, I wouldn't mind seeing the Bills go and the Bills and the Lions, number one, so we could trash talk Blue here for 2 weeks straight. And then, you know, in perpetuity sure. after the Lions victory. But we'd also get, you know, a brand new first time Super Bowl winner.
That'd be great. Yep. Sway, he's saying it again. He said it before. He's saying it again. Lions in the Super Bowl.
Hell yes, brother.
Yeah, I'm a believer.
You and all me right. both.
I think that's good for Wild Card Weekend, eh?
Yeah, I think so too.
You want to say? We got two games Saturday, two games Sunday, unless you know something gets delayed in Buffalo again or something. But thank God that got delayed. Not thank God it got delayed, but it got delayed to MLK Day, and I happened to be off. And so it was nice to watch two NFL football games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Or I'm sorry, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, rather.
Yeah, that was cool as hell. We got Dubo. He can't wait till next season when he gets his. Hey, there you go, brother. There you go. Wish you halfway decent luck, not good luck, because you are a division foe.
That's true.
If you finish ahead of the pack, I'm cool with that.
Right. All righty. It's time. School's in session. I hear the bell ringing.
Ding.
Ding. I think we have a bell. Do we have a bell?
I don't know.
Do I have a bell? I thought I had a bell.
Well, it doesn't matter at this point. We can just move right along.
Well, I thought I had a bell. Well, anyway. we want to talk about, again, some stats that are maybe recognizable, maybe not, when you're trying to evaluate some players. Any other info, or when you have some of this extra information, gives you a leg up on the competition, helps you spot trends a little easier, know who you should maybe start over somebody else. It's very important to know. We're going to talk about 5-4 pitching and 5-4 hitting. Do you want to get her started?
Yeah, I guess I can.
Oh, I forgot about this little graphic. I forgot.
Forgot we got about a new brunette.
We got a new one this time. She's pretty.
Yep. I wouldn't kick her out of bed for eating crackers.
No, absolutely not.
All right. So the first one we're going to talk about is ISO or isolated power. And you might have heard us reference this last week as well. This is something that measures raw power with an emphasis on extra base hits. It's a pretty simple formula. You count your doubles, your triples, and your home runs, divide it by the at-bats. And there's a little bit more math there. Or if you want to cheat and do the easy way, you can take slugging percentage and subtract batting average.
There you go.
This is something where, you know, the higher the number is the better. To give you some context, last season, 140 was average, roughly, give or take, anywhere between 140 and 150. Your two league leaders, Shohei Ohtani and Matt Olson, Ohtani was at 350, Matt Olson was at 321, and they were the only qualified hitters over 300 in this regard.
Wow. That's just nuts.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Let's see. On base percentage, otherwise known as OBP, refers how frequently a batter reaches base per plate appearance. That counts not just hits, but walks, hit by pitches, but does not include errors, right? Yeah, because that includes errors. Or times reached, like a fielder's choice doesn't count. A drop third strike isn't going to count. Sacrifice bunts don't count. They're removed as well. A hitter's goal is to avoid making an out. So on-base percentage shows which hitters have accomplished that task best. You can get a lot more stats when you're on base. You can get a steal. You can score a run. This is what you need. You need players that can get on base. Billy Bean.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, if you've heard of the book or the movie Moneyball, this is exactly what Billy Bean was talking about. He had identified a gap in the market where on base percentage was not being valued appropriately. Last season, an on base percentage of 320 was average. Mm-hmm. 416 led the league. That was pretty damn good.
Who was it?
I believe it was Acuna.
Acuna.
Let me pull this up here. That's pitchers. Yeah, I don't know. I think it was Acuna. I didn't jot that part down.
It makes sense that it is, but all right. You want to take slugging?
Yep, I sure do.
Gotcha switched.
So slugging percentage, this is a measure of total bases per at bat. Extra base hits are valued more. This is another higher number is better. When you think about slugging percentage, you're going to think about Shohei Ohtani, Corey Seager. League average slugging percentage is 414. 654 led the league last year.
It's kind of so like, and it's not like a double's not more, it's not really worth more than a single in the context of scoring, of course. But slugging percentage is one of the best evaluators of power because it accounts for more than other things other than home runs. God, I wish I could talk. Counts for more than just home runs. That would have been a much simpler phrase to use, Kyle.
A little bit.
All right, and now we're going to combine the previous two into this one. OPS stands for on-base percentage plus slugging. That's what it is. You're just going to be adding the OBP and the slugging together, and you will get the OPS. It's meant to combine how well a hitter can reach base and how well he can hit for average and for power. For an example, Babe Ruth ranks number one all-time in AL NL history with a career 1.164 OPS. That's insane.
It is. Last year, average was a 734 OPS. Mm-hmm. 1.066 led the league. And when you're comparing two players and you're using OPS, you want to make sure you're looking at the underlying numbers, because if you have two people with an 800 OPS and one of them gets on base 45% of the time, the other has a 535 slugging, those are two very different players. Mm-hmm. That arrived at the same result just through their own path.
That's true. That's a good point. All right.
So now we are going to dive into what's called the triple slash or the slash line. And you're going to see this pretty frequently. And all it is you're just putting on the screen the player's batting average, their on-base percentage, and their slugging. It's the three key metrics of hitting. It's a great snapshot into how well a hitter is hitting, getting on base, and the power that they're putting up. I like this because it gives you not necessarily a complete picture, because to me, trying to break down baseball too far is almost like a fool's errand. This gives you a good 5,000 foot view as to how a player is performing either over the course of the season or a 2-week stretch of the season. I really like it just because of its simplicity.
It is. And you watch a baseball game, they put it on the TV, their stats there when they're coming up. A lot of the time it's that same slash line. You might hear commentators or read, they'll say a player slashed 300, 400, 500. You'll hear that phrase a lot as well. That's what that means. So they're just talking about the average OBP and slugging. Heck yeah.
Now we're headed right to along. The mound.
We are moving right along. Oh yeah, I forgot those cool things. Oh well, budget. Oh, I'm going.
Yeah,
I'm going. Okay. We have ERA plus. It stands for adjusted earned run average. Takes a player's ERA and normalizes across the league. So we've talked about this last week, I think. That it'll adjust the score. So the league average is 100. So if you're got a ERA plus of 150, you're 50% better than the league average. So you take an example of, who did I have here? Mariano Rivera's 2.21 career ERA was 105% better than the MLB average during the time he pitched. That gives him a career 2.05 career ERA. That's the best all time. I think it's probably the most universally accepted tool for measuring a pitcher's performance. It attempts to level the playing field for all pitchers by adjusting for their impact in their external factors like their ballparks and their opponents.
Yeah, this also adjusts for era as well.
Okay.
That pitched it.
Yeah. ERA plus adjusts for ERA plus adjusts for era.
Yeah. For context, last year Blake Snell led baseball with a 182 ERA plus. So again, he was 82% better than average. And you're going to find that with all of these statistics as we kind of go on today and in future episodes, if you see a plus at the end, that means that average is normalized to 100.
Yep.
So next on the list, we have FIP, or fielding independent pitching. This estimates a pitcher's performance based on what he can control: walks, strikeouts, and home runs. That's typically referred to as the three true outcomes. So it removes fielding and random variance. The number is meant to resemble ERA. A lot of people are used to seeing, somebody, he's got a 3.25 ERA. He's pitching pretty well. So they wanted to keep that same scale. That way it was something that would be easily identifiable to those who were looking at it. The lower the number is, the better. Last season, MLB average was a 3.90 FIP, and Sonny Gray led baseball with a 2.83 FIP.
Yeah. To make it even simpler, a pitcher with a FIP higher than his ERA is getting lucky. His fielders are taking care of business behind him on the balls that are put in play. A lot of times you can expect regression on that. The exception is if you got a team with a great defense behind him, and there's a few out there.
Arizona, Detroit. Yeah,
Arizona would be a good one. Detroit was very good last year as well. But it's always nice when you got the defenders behind you that they can cause more batted balls to be outs. FIP will be good. I'll just let you take XFIP too, because it's just the same. It's related.
All right. Easy enough. So we've got XFIP, and that stands for expected fielding independent pitching. And so we're starting with roughly a similar base to what we had with FIP, only this replaces a pitcher's home run rate with the league average. This allowance was made just because there are some folks out there who feel that pitchers really only have limited control over home runs. This is something that's good for helping to predict future performance because it indicates how well a pitcher should have done given average luck and fielding behind him. Last season, the average XFIP was 3.97. 2.92 led the league by Mr. Spencer Strider. And this is a category where some more casual baseball fans, you're going to run into names you may not recognize, like Logan Webb and Zach Eflin as well.
Yeah. Good pitchers. Good pitchers.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Next we have WHIP, walks and hits per inning pitched. One of the most commonly used stats for evaluating a pitcher's performance kind of shows how well pitchers have kept runners off the base paths. That's your number one goal as a pitcher. Keep them off the bases. They can't score if they ain't on base. The formula is simple enough. It's the sum of the pitchers and walks, or pitchers' walks and hits, divided by his total innings pitched. The pitchers with the best whips in the league are the lowest whips in the league are generally the best pitchers in the league, though not always. Hit batsmen. Jesus, oh, I can't say that. Errors and hitters who reach fielder's choice do not count against a pitcher's whip. Yeah. Your turn. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, this is one, it's lower the better. League average is about 1.31, and that just is saying that the average pitcher allows a little over one base runner per inning. Last season, Garrett Cole led the league with a 0.98 whip, which means he was allowing less than one base runner per inning pitched, which is pretty damn good. It's elite. Anytime you're down in you know, 1.0 something or below that, you're in rarefied air.
Absolutely. Okay. You got
the next strikeout to walk ratio. So this one works just like any other ratio is. It compares a pitcher's strikeouts to walks issued. This is one where it's the higher the number, the better, because you're talking about the variance between the number of batters that a pitcher strikes out versus the numbers of walks issued. It indicates pitchers who have better control and effectiveness. Last season, the average across Major League Baseball was a 14.1% K to walk ratio. I think it was 22% strikeout rate and a little bit over 4 or 8% walk rate. And all it is, you're taking the difference between the two numbers. Some players who, you know, some of you may recognize who excel in this category would be Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw. These would be pitchers who strike out a great deal of batters, but don't really issue many free passes.
Right. Made a little graphic up this to kind of make it a little bit better. Where's that at? So Nathan Eovaldi, if he goes out there and he strikes out the side in order 1, 2, 3, he's got a K per nine of 27%, but his K to walk ratio is 100%. Garrett Cole, he goes out there, he strikes out his first two batters, allows two straight singles before getting a strikeout to end the inning. His K per nine is still 27, but his K to walk ratio is 60%. And then you have Tarik Skubal, with for our Tigers, gotta love him. K's the first two batters like Garrett Cole, but then he allows two singles consecutively. Then he walks a batter before striking out the third final guy to end the inning. Again, his K to nine is 27% still, because they're getting the same amount of K's, but his K to walk ratio is 33.3, far worse.
Nice.
Yeah. A little different there. Holy shit.
We made it through it all.
Holy shit. We did.
6.5 minutes to spare.
Damn, what do you guys want to talk about? Anybody out there? Dubo, Blue Jays, Sway, Supersonic? Anything good out there?
Shit. Everybody's trying to stay warm.
Man, I know. We got another few days of this till, like, I think Monday don't warm up in Michigan till, yeah, next Monday. Gonna be like 30s. I'll take that over this -6. Feels like right now.
No kidding.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it ain't the heat, it's the humidity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
All right, so we got Dubo. Says the graphics help. That was good.
Yeah, man, that was the hey. That's why I do those things, man. I was like, how can I show this?
Nothing beats a good visual aid.
It does. It definitely helps. I wish we could have. I could have. If I'd had more time today, I'd have done some more graphics for some of these other stats. But we both got full time jobs, and you know, can't always get everything that we want done. I'm just glad we got. I'm surprised we got through this in under an hour. I thought the prospect profiling would be longer, but Went right through it. And again, we'll do another 10 on Thursday. So we're talking about doing a Sunday show when the season starts. All right. That's cool.
What?
Bravo on the effort. Appreciate the teaching. Dude, you're welcome, man. Well, like, you know, you guys were still following us and interested and hadn't really played a lot of fantasy baseball or haven't done it in a long time. And so Matt had the great idea to do this, to talk about something each week or each episode, just to give you guys some more tools, refamiliarize yourself with some things. Some things have changed just in the last 10 years in baseball with the in regards to stats and the way things are looked at. So if you haven't played even longer than that, whew. So yeah, we wanted to definitely give you some information, some education, some re-education, I should say. And, cause we want you guys to join the baseball league and dominate, you know, if you play some other leagues or get in some other leagues with some friends, dominate those leagues. We want you guys to be prepared.
That's it. We're here to try and help you guys make money. And that's why our separate video of Fantasy Baseball 101 was uploaded 4 times, because we wanted to make sure it was perfect or as close to it.
Yeah. That plus shit is all new to me. I know. Same. Even a few years ago, when I got back into this, I had to learn things. I had to learn things. So same as you guys. So, but nobody was here to teach me. Well, except for Matt here and there, but
yeah, and a lot of it, I mean, it can seem intimidating on the surface, just because there's so many different analytics out there. And quite frankly, there's a lot of them that are, you know, you put two or three together and they're both kind of telling you the same thing, but in a mm-hmm. different way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand all the formulas, but I understand what the number is and what the number is telling us. And that's what I want to help you guys understand. Doesn't matter what the formula is or how you arrived at it. All we want to know is what is this information telling me, and what can I do with this information?
Exactly. That's a great, great point. It helped me just to learn a few things last year to be ready. And I had a great fantasy baseball season. I loved it. But I would have had a lot worse had I not done some prep. Oh, we got Brandon. Let's go Lions.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah,
you're going to be going to 2 more games down there at Ford Field this year.
Man, hopefully that'd be sweet. Jesus. Can you imagine hosting an NFC championship?
That'd be amazing.
Insane. I guess I got to root for the Packers this weekend. Cool.
You can do it.
You can do it, man. All right. I don't got anything else. You ready?
I don't either. Let's call this shit a day.
Out.
Appreciate all you guys stopping by. Don't forget, we're going to be here on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock again. We're going to have some more fantasy baseball 101 for you. We're going to be talking more about prospects, the lifeblood of baseball itself. And I always enjoy trying to take a peek at the next generation of those superstars before they become superstars. That's all for now. Appreciate the hell out of everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good night, folks. Take it easy.